On the line with us from Gaza, George Azar, photo professional, living in the Middle East for the last 20 years and covering the events there. Mr. Azar, welcome to our show and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
In all the media, it is recorded that today is a historical day. This is the day where the settlers are withdrawing from the Gaza district. What are your impressions? Is it really a fact of such great importance?
Well, you know, it is a great and historic day here. On the Palestinian side of the line, we are still in a wait-and-see mode. Nothing really has changed for us here. We're expecting that after the Israeli withdrawal from the illegal settlements that Gazans will now reclaim 40% of their land here, which is in very short supply. But feelings here are actually quite mixed because although the Israelis are withdrawing from occupied Palestinian land, there's still the fear that the controls around the borders will remain in place with the separation wall and all the other Israeli barriers to movement here, and that Gaza will continue to be the world's largest prison.
Well, I've noticed that you are saying withdrawal. I also say withdrawal, and this was occupied territory. Gaza was occupied after the Six Days War in June 1967. However, everywhere we see unilateral disengagement. Is there a difference in the two terms? Does this have a certain connotation, or are we like Arabs reading too much into this word?
Well, you know, like so much of the discourse about the Israel-Palestinian conflict, the terms of reference are defined by the Israelis and by the Western press. They've chose to use the term disengagement, which is a completely one-sided perspective of what's happening here. The Israelis are, they believe, disengaging from their interaction with the Palestinians. However, from our point of view, we take issue with this term. On one hand, we see it as a great liberation. As I said, 40% of Gaza is being reclaimed by the Gazans after a long and illegal occupation. And on the other hand, they are not actually disengaging from us, but rather it appears to be redrawing the line so that while they are removing 4,000 settlers from this area, as I said, they haven't disengaged to the extent that they continue to restrict the movements of Palestinians in and out of the Gaza Strip, as well as deny access to the airport and to the sea lanes.
If you could describe to us, please, what happens on the Palestinian-Egyptian border at Rafah. There is a checkpoint. So who's managing the checkpoint now, in effect? Is there going to be free movement of the Palestinians towards Egypt and vice versa or not?
Well, you know, it's as though there is a great big question mark in the sky over Gaza. We simply don't know. This Israeli move is completely unilateral, so there has been no consultation to the Palestinian people, nor any real information giving as to whether the borders to the Gaza Strip will be opened or whether they will continue to be sealed. It would be a great thing. It would be a wonderful thing if the sea lanes were open to Gazans to travel to the wider Mediterranean region, to Cyprus, to Greece, to Italy, and to rejoin the Mediterranean family. And at the same token, it would be wonderful to regain our connection with Egypt so that goods and people and families could flow back and forth normally across this border. But we just don't know. And from all the noises coming out of Tel Aviv and from Jerusalem, it seems that the Israelis, while they are pulling their settlers out, it looks as though they will continue to lock the Palestinian people into the Gaza Strip.
Are there police forces on the borders, on the border with Egypt and on the border also, or rather the checkpoints into Israel proper?
Yes. In fact, there is a very large Palestinian police presence throughout the Gaza Strip now. A lot of police have been re-equipped. They're sporting new uniforms, new bulletproof vests and that sort of things, and they are asserting their presence here in a way that we haven't seen before, and people really quite welcome that because everyone here really, the hopes for a sense of law and order and stability here in this post-withdrawal period.
What about the airport? After the Oslo Accord, Gaza used to have its own airport, and we remember when the late Yasser Arafat flew into this airport.
Well, the airport is still sitting in the southern end of the Gaza Strip. It's a lovely little airport. The Israelis have destroyed the runways so that planes cannot land. Go into the terminals, and it's actually quite sad because all the waiting rooms have been kept spotlessly clean, and the signs are all there in place announcing where the flights will go and come, but there's no arrivals posted and none expected on the great big flight board that stands above the airport. So, you know, the airport is really a symbol of freedom here in Gaza, and, you know, more than anything else, people are wishing for the opportunity to be able to get onto an airplane and to fly to countries in the surrounding region and to Europe and to the Mediterranean. And if I had to really express what the Palestinians are longing for, what freedom means to them, what liberation means to them at this point, it's sort of twofold. One is economic. People are desperately in need of jobs. They're desperately in need of work. It's not unusual to see men languishing day after day with no work and nothing to do and no means to provide for their families. So they're hoping the disengagement will bring jobs, will bring, you know, the opportunity for people to work, men and women. And the other thing that people long for is the ability to travel. You know, it's a very small place here, and many Gazans younger people have never been to Jerusalem. They've never been to Ramallah or other parts of the Palestinian territory, much less ever seen Egypt or Syria or Lebanon or the surrounding regions. And so really people are hoping that that in this next phase they will have the freedom to move and that we will be able to greet visitors here and welcome visitors to Gaza.
Mr. Azar, there has been really sizable compensations for the settlers in the order of $200,000 for each family leaving and resettling in Israel proper. Has there been any promise for financial aid to the Palestinians so that their economy would pick up?
Actually, the international donor community and agencies like the United Nations and the UN have done a tremendous job with the economy here. And there actually are a great deal of both business dollars from the private sector waiting to invest in Gaza, as well as money from the international community, from the European Union and from other nations around the world that are looking to help Gaza get back on its feet. But we simply don't know whether, you know, these promises will become a reality. But, you know, it is rather heartbreaking for Palestinians to see the sorts of astronomical compensations that the Israeli settlers are getting, essentially for removing themselves from illegally occupied territory, they're wishing as refugees, really for the past half century here in the Gaza Strip, with no compensation at all. So once again, it seems like just a tremendous double standard. And, you know, we have to say that, you know, looking at the scenes from the Israeli settlements on television from here, to us really plays as just a huge piece of political theater, a farce, as you will. You know, people wailing and bemoaning the fact that they're having to leave land which they essentially stole.
Mr. Azar, you have written a book, Palestine, A Guide. Can you give us some idea about what do you describe in this guide to Palestine? And what Palestine are you talking about?
Well, Palestine, A Guide is a book which was 4 years in the making. It was funded by the UNDP, and it was put together by a team of experts led by Maryam Shaheen, who is the principal author. And the book itself is a primer on the historic Palestinian homeland. And what it attempts to do in 500 pages is to explain the history of every major Palestinian town and city and village, some of which no longer exist and some of which exist inside the State of Israel, and to explain their history really going back to the Canaanite period, the Philistine period, and even the Neolithic period up through the present moment, but telling the narrative of these cities from a Palestinian perspective. So for once, what we have is really a beautiful, richly illustrated book on the contemporary Palestinian homeland as it exists today, but with a historic narrative, which is the indigenous Palestinian narrative, as opposed to a Western narrative or a Zionist narrative of the history of this land.
I understand it is available through Amazon.com?
Yes, it's available on Amazon.com. I'm a photographer. And I think really for anyone trying to understand the Palestinian people today, where we are today, where we look to go in the future, and where we've come from, it's really a wonderful book.
One last question about the inhabitants of Gaza. We know that some of them are refugees. They came from other parts of Palestine. They were expelled from other parts of Palestine and they gathered into Gaza. Can you just give us a very brief description of the composition of the inhabitants in Gaza?
Well, about 20% of the inhabitants of Gaza are old Gaza families. And the other 80% are refugees, mainly who came from the southern part of what is now Israel, what was then Palestine. Cities from Jaffa, south to Isdud, to Ashkelon, Beer Saba, who fled into the Gaza Strip in the 1940s, after the war of 1948, and have been locked out of Israel ever since, locked out of returning to their homelands. They inhabit refugee camps up and down the Gaza Strip. The one that I live next to is called Shati Refugee Camp, which is on the beach. In fact, it's Shati, and it means beach in Arabic. Many of the descendants from Shati Camp are actually from Jaffa. And in fact, today I visited with a man who's a shipbuilder, and he was building a ship from raw wooden planks along the ocean today. And he told me that, you know, he is a son of Jaffa. His father was a shipbuilder in Jaffa in the 1940s, and his grandfather before him was a shipbuilder and a fisherman in Jaffa. And today he carries on this tradition by the sea in Gaza.
Thank you very much, George Azar.